who were these people? How were they so sophisticated? And it just it baffles me, because you look at the construction techniques of, you know, just again, if we go back to the Great Pyramid, you look at Cusco and Peru, or Sacsayhuaman in Peru, you realize some of these blocks are hundreds of tons. Some of them were moved from quite a long way away. So just from that perspective, just from an engineering perspective, you realize that it was a huge feat of engineering. And so today we couldn't even do it with some of the most advanced crane technology we have. So to say, you know, like the academics and the archaeologists, a lot of people still believe these were primitive people. They were like cavemen. But I think there's a whole, we need to relook at that completely. We need to, there's a whole paradigm shift is necessary to really understand, you know, who we were, who our ancestors were.
They were cavemen with sophisticated tools, probably computers and slide rules.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm sure.
These sites, how were they selected? Because they all seem to have purpose.
This is where the grid theory comes in here, because we need to step back and question, you know, did the sites, they choose the sites because it was convenient to them, or did they choose the sites because they were actually traveling on a global scale or on a national scale and surveying the land? So they put markers up, so then they could, like, use one marker to another and triangulate their way across a country.
If you looked at the planet, Hugh, from space, where all these sites are, is there any pattern to it?
There seems to be a pattern forming. Yeah, the more you look into it, you realize there are patterns. I wouldn't say there's one universal pattern for the whole planet. There's a lot of sites that don't fit onto the grid, for instance, or the grids. But there seems to be sort of different levels of grids. There's some, like I say, some are national, some are more local, and some are global. And so you have to look at it from different perspectives, really, and also from different time eras as well. Because you realize there's extremely ancient sites, like you get Göbekli Tepe in southern Turkey, Baalbek in the Lebanon, and other sites around the planet. With other sites in the Neolithic times, so they're like 4,000 or 5,000 BC, and others which are Bronze Age, a couple of thousand BC. So when you start looking at, I'm starting to research all the different levels of time to see if there's any correlation, see if different surveys or different scientific projects were carried out at different points in time. And so I think if you do map them all out over the planet, you do find patterns. And this is one of the things I've sort of looked into closely in all the different areas of that in my Earth Grids book. So I've sort of gone into more detail about that in there. But there certainly are patterns there, yeah.
Tell me about these Earth energy sites and what kind of energy might be at these locations.
Well, this all fits into the grid theory as well, actually. There's been there's two ways to approach the Earth energies when you're looking at sacred sites and ancient sites. There's one from a geomantist perspective, like dowsing, where it's much more intuitive, and you're quite sensitive. You turn up with dowsing rods or pendulums, and you can find these energies and map them out like that. But there's been a whole scientific surge of research done over the last decade or so, where they've actually sort of verified a lot of what the dowsers and geomancers have been saying scientifically. And so if you just take, you know, an example of a stone circle in Britain, for instance, you'll find that there are telluric lines of telluric energies going all across the landscape of Britain, all around the world, really. And they kind of get charged up by the sun as it rises every morning, and they strengthen and tighten. And the sites seem to somehow harness these kind of earth energy lines. And they carry like a weak DC current, so they have a slight electrical charge. And these alter, this electrical charge alters as it moves through different types of rock and soil and underground water and chalk, etc. And so you get different energy signatures. It becomes more magnetic and it becomes more electric charge. And often when there's an electric charge, where is what is called a conductivity discontinuity, which is something John Burke, author of Seed of Knowledge, Stone of Plenty, covered in detail, is where a lot of sacred sites occur. And so you have to ask the question, were the sites put there because there was some kind of charge there, some kind of energy, and then they were either marking it from a more sacred or spiritual perspective, or perhaps it was a more scientific and pragmatic perspective where they were somehow using these energies. And there's a whole load of research which John Burke and Philip Callahan and others have done, where they've actually realized that there could have been a fertility technology charge up seeds, to enhance crops, and things like this, possibly even human fertility and animal fertility as well for farming. And so there's a lot of research done on that, and I could happily talk about that for some time as well. But, yeah, there's certainly something to do with these earth energies. And if you look at it from – there's a great earth energy current or currents that go across southern England called the Michael and Mary energy currents. And they kind of go all the way from the Cornwall coast all the way up to the East Anglian coast. And there's evidence now that they go all the way around the planet. But somehow the ancients could have been harnessing global earth energy currents on a grand scale. So you have to, again, you have to come back to this idea of grids and these kind of theories, that was there a great civilization in prehistory that worked on a global level? And I really think there was.
And they knew about all these sites. Now, is the energy, can it be registered on equipment?
Yes, it has been. It's started to happen now, actually. This is something that Burke and others have sort of put a lot of energy and time into. And it's brilliantly covered in that book, and other researchers have done it as well. I've got myself a small tri-field magnetometer, which I've been testing at sites. I take dowsing rods as well and see if it, and also compasses to see if there's any not magnetic anomalies. And you do often find stuff going on, but, yeah, I mean, Burke and others, they've been using very high-tech, thousands of dollars, you know, pieces of equipment to record these energies, and they've had to spend days there picking up these energies, and they've got remarkable results. So, yes, science is now coming around to what the geomancers and the dowsers have been, you know, talking about for decades.
Can you tell us what the significance is of having these energy forces and fields at these locations?
Well, the significance is quite important because there's a whole area, an invisible energy area of prehistory has never been looked at. And so it's only literally in the last decade starting to be looked at. And so we're really starting for the first time ever to get into the mindset of the ancient peoples and about how they were working and how they were working with these invisible energies. And so we must question ourselves about, well, you know, if these sites were working then, isn't it interesting how they seem to be working now as well? I mean, cause all these energies that these scientific people have been exploring, they're actually picking them up now still. Some of these sites are built between 5,000 and 10,000 years ago. And so the significance is quite interesting because it also shows like a fertility technology of the ancients that we've only just rediscovered, and proves that they were sophisticated enough to harness these natural energies with these stone circles, with these mounds, with these earthworks all over the planet, and use it for a purpose that was pragmatic and useful